Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable. Welcome to our panel discussion. It is Thursday, the 9th of February. And I know it is, it's bad weather pretty much over our entire region. So as David Gastina has been telling you all morning long to be cautious. We all have made our various ways in this morning, and it's, you know, it's not great. So if you are out and about, you know to be careful. We don't need to tell you that. But I hope, this is my private hope, that you are just home. You're listening to the radio. You have slippers and curled up on a sofa with a dog or a cat on your lap, and you're listening.
That sounds so good.
Isn't that great?
What am I doing here?
You're making sure that they can be with their cats.
We can get you a cat.
All right. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, sir.
Yo, it's really, really rough in the Berkshires, which is exactly where I am. No cat in the
Well,
in
you
the
got lap, Murray, right?
But I'm. Well, we have Murray, and I said to Murray, Murray, you cannot bark during the show.
Yeah, Murray made a cameo last week.
He did, and somebody wrote in and said, Murray's barking, someone's at the door.
Well, we are glad you are safe and at home, and which seems
there's
like
a lot of snow here.
Very, very good plan for today, so it's all good. Rosemary Armeo is here as well. She is the director of the journalism program at the University at Albany,
which is closed today. Very
closed today.
Event.
So you had an off day, and I screwed it all up.
You did. I could have been in bed or on the couch with the cat, yeah, et cetera.
Chris Churchill, I think you had the day off too, right?
I did. You screwed that up.
I screwed that up too. Yep. Well, I tried to share the love. Thank you for coming in.
Oh,
I appreciate it. Chris Churchill is a columnist for the Times Union newspaper, and it's great to have Chris here. So you ticked off Roger Stone this week.
Oh, you noticed that.
Yeah. This is a great story. Mike Spain was with us on Tuesday, and Mike talked about how great Chris's column was about Roger Stone's new book on Donald Trump. So we were reading it, and we thought, yeah, this is great. And then, you say, tell what happened.
Well, you know, he usually, I kind of expected that he would respond. He usually does from what people have told me. And he tweeted out something about the Times Union being the worst newspaper in America. I thought about putting it on the masthead.
Well, I wanted to tell that story in your introduction because I wanted to introduce you as the columnist from the worst newspaper in America.
Yeah.
We're very proud that you're here, but very good. A long time political.
Hey, Joe, I just wanted to mention that Roger Stone has a nickname that most people don't know.
What is that?
Roger, him I don't like, Stone.
That sounds like your nickname for him.
It is my nickname for him.
He's a longtime political operative and has very close ties to Albany.
Yes. And
a trickster, and a well-known trickster.
Right, a proud one, a proud trickster, too. I mean, he's not one of these people who does dirty tricks and then claims otherwise. He's very happy to acknowledge his dirty tricks.
So he wrote a new book, and let's just say your column, which wasn't really a review, it was just telling you that it was awful. It wasn't just like bad, it was just awful.
Yeah, well, it was just a blow-by-blow-by-blow account of an election that, you know, was hard to live through, and very few people would want to relive it, you know? and it you know, he thought every insult that Trump delivered during the campaign was terrific. But there wasn't a whole lot of there will be some really great books written about that campaign or that race on both sides, but this book wasn't one of them.
All right. Well, congratulations. It was very well done, and we appreciate you being here this morning representing the worst newspaper in America. We are, again, badge of honor, I think. But let's go to the news of the day now that everyone has been introduced. We also remind you can join our conversation panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Don't write to any other address because we won't see your letter and we won't write it. Or we won't read it. Okay. Now, let's go to the stories. And we begin with, there's a lot going on, obviously. Let's talk about the Supreme Court nominee who says that Trump's attacks on the judiciary are demoralizing. His escalating attacks on the federal judiciary drew denunciation Wednesday from his Supreme Court nominee Neil Gorsuch, who told the senator that the criticism was disheartening and demoralizing to independent federal courts. Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut said Gorsuch made the comments during their private meeting Wednesday, and the account was confirmed by a member of the group guiding the judge through the confirmation process. Trump on Wednesday morning declared that an appeals court's hearing Tuesday night regarding his controversial immigration executive order was disgraceful, and that judges were more concerned about politics than following the law. So there's a lot to go after in that very, in those two paragraphs. Alan, I'll let you have the first crack at it.
Well, first of all, we just heard on NPR that Blumenthal was the guy he talked to, Senator Blumenthal from Connecticut, and it was most disheartening. And he repeated what Gorsuch had said to him when he asked him about these attacks on the judiciary. But you know, I'm such a suspicious fellow that I always wonder whether or not what the motives behind anything are. So, for example, he said this to Blumenthal. It was obviously what Blumenthal asked, obviously what Blumenthal wanted to hear. Nevertheless, you know, he's going to fight. He's going to have a tough fight for, you know, for being confirmed. And my sense of it is it could well be that the reason you do something like that is you get some Democrats on your side. Hey, this guy's not so bad. He said he's disheartened by this. You know, maybe not. We can't get inside somebody's heads to know motives, but it certainly is a possibility, right?
Senator Richard Blumenthal, who never fought in Vietnam when he said for years he had, major lie, now misrepresents what Judge Gorsuch told him. That was the tweet this morning from Donald Trump. Rosemary.
Well, my read on it is different than Alan. I think Blumenthal wanted to hear something much stronger than that. Disheartening. You know, I'm disheartened by the weather today. It's not very strong. And that he then used stuff said in a, you said it, private meeting, then goes public with it. That's kind of, a reporter wouldn't do that. So right. Why is the senator doing that? Obviously, he wants to pressure Gorsuch into saying something anti-Trump in a public forum. That's a little sleazy to me. And I do think it helped him, probably helped him with Democrats because he looks like a man who's trying to be diplomatic in a bad situation, which is what I would want a Supreme Court judge to do.
I was listening to CNN last night, and they had several senators, both Democratic and Republican, who both were very uneasy with Blumenthal sharing the comments that
It's kind of sleazy. And there's one other element in this, and that is Blumenthal is Jewish, and Trump's tweets have been, in the past, very anti-Semitic. He went after Jon Stewart. Why doesn't he use his real name, which sounds more Jewish than Scottish. And I think some of that's after going after Blumenthal, too, with the, you know, did he lie about or exaggerate his military record?
Chris Churchill.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot there. I mean, Trump going after somebody else's military record is kind of interesting in itself, but
it's not stopped him in the past. And he has a lot of general friends, and he knows more than the generals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he wasn't in Vietnam either. It's just worth noting, you know. Actually, Blumenthal was. I think he just exaggerated it a little bit, right? Isn't that what they claimed?
What did he do? I'm sorry, but I don't know. What did he do that's the supposed exaggeration?
Blumenthal came under sharp criticism during the 2010 campaign for repeated remarks over the years that he had served in Vietnam, although he did his full Marine service in the United States. Blumenthal obtained several deferments between 65 and 70 and then joined the Marine Reserves, but did not serve actually in Vietnam. He later said he misspoke and intended to say that he was in the Marine Reserves during the Vietnam conflict.
Ew. That's kind of Brian Williams-like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, obviously it's not good, but it's still more than Trump did militarily. In terms of what Blumenthal said, I saw Ben Sasse on TV, the Republican from Nebraska, and he said much the same. He said that when he met privately with Gorsuch, that Gorsuch was very passionate when the subject of Trump's attack on the judiciary came up, and that he was very, very upset by it. So it isn't Blumenthal alone who is saying this.
Well, the judge's own staff is saying, yeah, he did say that.
Right.
It's not that big a thing to say. He's a member of a high a high-level court, and to have the president of the United States disparage a similar court, a similar circuit court, definitely is discouraging.
Well, it's a lot like journalists, right? I mean, Trump has spent his entire time just disparaging journalists. So if you are on the judiciary and you're seeing that body being leveled by the president of the United States, you are going to defend it, I would think.
Right, and Ben Sasse said that Gorsuch said something to the effect of an attack on one of us is an attack on all of us. So,
well, that would be good. That's a lot stronger than anything I heard. I don't know, understand why this is a big story.
Well, because somebody's, you know, poking the bear.
Poking Trump?
Yeah. And not just somebody's poking the bear, but somebody who, you know, was cuddling up to the bear.
I like the guy, the guys from Nordstrom poking at him after.
Well, we'll talk about that.
Tweet.
We'll talk about that too. But Alan, so when you look at, I mean, you've had Blumenthal on many times. So what I mean, when you look at something like this, do you say, you know, it's just a blip and won't really have much of an effect?
I think you may be confusing Blumenthal with Murphy. Murphy is going to be on today. We're going to have my
congressional
corner.
No, but you've had Blumenthal
on.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think I may have once. But I think he's a good guy. I don't agree at all that it was inappropriate, considering what's at stake here, for him to say what happened in this conversation. I hate the idea that the United States Senate is now saying, oh, yeah, well, the Senate is a place where we can talk to each other and talk things out and give everybody freedom of speech. And now it's not. We're going to take that away from one senator and let others do it. And now we're going to say that senators should have private conversations that we shouldn't be involved in. No, I mean, I think he did the right thing. I love Rosemary, but I don't agree with her on this.
Well, I think you're conflating speech in the open forum on the Senate floor, and where men apparently can still say anything they want, but the women can't.
Exactly.
And meetings that are held in private in senatorial chambers before the discussion on the main floor. If he had said it that way, like, that would be different. But he had a private meeting with the guy and then goes and talks to reporters. I mean, I'm glad he did. Anytime people talk to reporters, I'm happy. But I don't think it was really great behavior.
Oh, see, I don't really know what the rules are. I do know that the fact that staff confirmed that he did say it from his side indicates to me that he is not unhappy to have this out there.
Yeah, well, it's no big deal.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible. It's possible that Blumenthal even asked him for the okay before he said it. Who knows, you know?
We don't know. Yeah, we don't know.
So,
well, once again, congratulations, Chris, on having that awful man after you. That's terrific.
Okay.
That's the best thing I could say.
All right. Let's go on to another story before we have to break in a few moments. And we go over to what else? Well, we do want to mention that Jeff Sessions was confirmed after the Elizabeth Warren brouhaha. Jeff Sessions confirmed, capping a bitter battle, surprising probably no one, right?
Yeah, I was a little worried about it. Oh, sorry, Alan. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was a little worried about him being the attorney general with his horrible record on racism and being against civil rights and voting suppression. But then McConnell said, oh, he's a perfect Southern gentleman, and so now I feel fine about it.
You're good?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
That's all you look for?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
Yeah, and Alan, what were you going to say?
Well, if you think I remember, you're wrong. But
sorry, Alan.
But no, that's okay. But what I was going to say is, Rosemary made a point earlier that I really liked and said, no big deal on the judge. This is a big deal. Because if this country is going to be led into fascism of one kind or another, it's going to be this guy more than anyone else who leads them there. And you won't know it until the FBI starts to do things, until they do things. It scares the hell out of me. Only one man would have scared me worse, and that's Rudolph Giuliani. But this guy he's a tough guy. When he was a U.S. attorney, he did some things that turn out to be a little bit despicable in terms of his racist stuff scares the hell out of me.
Well, but nobody thought that this confirmation wasn't going to happen, right? I mean, it was kind of a done deal. There's no real surprise happened yesterday, and in fact, he sailed through a lot easier than Betsy DeVos did.
He actually got one Democratic vote. The guy from West Virginia, mm-hmm. Manchin, yeah. So he said his daughter was behind the EpiPen price scandal.
Right.
So he sounds like a lovely, perfect gentleman, too.
I think he's up for re-election in 2018, too, in a state that went overwhelmingly, 40 points for Trump or something like that.
And, there he is. He's just defending his daughter's business. I mean, that's becoming quite the tradition in American government.
52-47 was the vote. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll dive into other issues as well. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Romeo, and Chris Churchill. We'll be right back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable into our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Chris Churchill. I'm Joe Donahue, and we're making up the group this morning. We have letters. Let's start with the yes, sir.
Yeah. Just let me read. We've had about a dozen letters, all correcting the record on Blumenthal versus Gorsuch. This last one says, "Dear Alan, I'm reading this one, although they don't all say the same thing. I think you're spot on Gorsuch's comment. And a shrewd political move to distance himself from the president. The man is a master of politics and has used it to further his nomination. And the point is, a dozen people have written us, having heard on Morning Joe this morning, Blumenthal say that he had specific permission from Flack, almost a suggestion from Flack from Gorsuch that he do that and that he let it go. So I think my first sense of that this may be very shrewd and a good way to get over. I would stand with it even if it flies in the face of others.
All right, were you going to say something, Rosemary? I'm sorry. Okay. All right, let's go to some letters. That was just the letter you read. Okay, so there. Yeah. Move on to that. Got it. Dale of Williamstown writes, Senator Blumenthal appeared on one of the corporate broadcast networks this morning and said, Judge Gorsuch told me to feel free to share his comments about finding the president's remark demoralizing with the public. If the goal of journalism is fair and accurate, should news outlets ban Kellyanne Conway and Sean Spicer? Would that be manipulating the news?
Oh, I love this story. There's a lot going on about that. They have repeatedly been found to have given deceitful and untrue, false. Okay, who knows what the motive was, but false information. And so there's been a reluctance by CNN to call them back. Why? We want someone else. I think it's a good move. I love you. You should talk about it. You had me watch it, the Jake Tapper. And Kellyanne interview where he calls her out for the first time. I've never seen him be so strong, calling her out on falsehoods.
It was I think she was trying to do a mea culpa, and he was not really having any of it, and was going after her. But
I misspoke. I said Bowling Green massacre. I should have said terrorists. And he goes, well, you said it like four or five times.
And you had said it before that, and you already used that word in the construction of the sentence. So why would you use it twice? And it certainly didn't sound like it was misspoken.
Right. And this wasn't a misspeaking incident. This was crafting something that was plainly not true.
So that larger issue, though, is interesting to me of if you are offered Sean Spicer or you are offered Kellyanne Conway, what do you do?
I think you have to say I don't think you can say no. I mean, they are the spokespeople for the administration. You have to let them you have to let them speak, but you have to challenge them. I think what Jake Tapper did was right. You challenge the things that you know to be untrue. You don't let them just get on the air and spout lies for an hour. You know, you have an interview.
That's what we've had for 2 years, though. It's one thing to say, "Oh, I can take on Kellyanne." You can't. She's like a really professional, crafted liar, more so than Spicer. Spicer just screams at you. And I think that if we keep acting with the old rules, these are big people, we got to talk to them, we're going to end up in the position we have found ourselves right now. I think it's great that they said, no, we don't want them. They lie. That's good.
Alan.
extraordinary.
Would you want him
well,
on?
That's extraordinary. Yeah, I would. Of course I would. And I completely agree with Chris that what you do in this case is it's your job to come prepared. It's your job to say, why did you lie? It's your job to call them out. But when the president of the United States or his spokesman, most powerful man in the country and maybe the world, offers you somebody, you take them. I can't imagine not taking them.
Why do they offer it then? It's an offer. That doesn't mean you have to take it. It isn't a demand. It's not like you're getting equal time. Of course, you have to be fair. But, I mean, be smart about it. I would go after Rudy Giuliani. He actually gives news and leaks stuff that shouldn't get out there. That's who I'd want on my program.
But I don't think
well,
any journalist...
problem is.
Go ahead, Alan.
Here's the point. It's not either or. It's not either or Rudy Giuliani or the others. You take Rudy Giuliani. Of course you're right about that. But you don't say to the president or to his spokespeople that they are not welcome and that because you know that that's where the power is right now. I'm sorry, Chris. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that I don't think journalists should assume that anyone in Sean Spicer's role is telling the truth.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't matter what right. administration they're speaking for. I think you always have to be a little bit skeptical because they're giving us, you know, some spin. They may be a more extreme version of that.
There you go.
But, you know, it's the same as it's always been.
I mean, Ron Ziegler, for example, was in the same role when he was speaking for Nixon and was not always truthful. And he got a lot of the same sort of flack. But the presidential spokesman between Nixon and now, managed to have a cordial relationship with the press. You can say, look, you know, I can't give you that information. And you respect that as a journalist. There's reasons that a spokesman can't give you the full story. Spicer doesn't do that. He's telling us to accept things that are blatantly false. This was the biggest inauguration ever, period. Come on.
Well, but here's another way of looking at that. A lot depends on who your principal is. If, in fact, your principal is Gerald Ford, a thoroughly decent man, and you're the spokesman, that could be very different from a guy who sits up there and himself lies all the time. The president, in tweet after tweet after tweet, tells falsehoods and lies. And therefore, you know, Sean Spicer, if he wants the job, is being told upstairs, now look, you go and say this, this, and this, and you don't have any choice. He's just the Pinocchio on the end of the string.
There's also an element where I think you have to let people embarrass themselves. I mean, if you're going to quote him and then the next paragraph every time says that's an inaccurate statement, or here's the, you know, after a while, I think people get the message. If you just ignore them entirely, I think that you're not really doing anybody a service.
I wish I thought that were true. I watched 2 years of that, however, and
you're talking about the Trump campaign.
Trump and the entire campaign, and people didn't get it. They got the lie. So I guess I would change my negotiating tactic, and I say, okay, if you want to put a liar on, I want the big guy himself. Bring on the big fat professional liar who we voted into office. I'll put him on. But Sean Spicer, he's like a surrogate liar.
Yeah,
yes, he is.
Yeah,
yes, he is. This we heard as usual. Rosemary is right. They don't tell the truth. They don't need to give credence, and they can communicate elsewhere and still be heard. We are dealing with the dangerous cabal of racists, and they must need to be treated in any other manner than to have as much power taken from them as possible.
Another thing, from George and Sharon. Another thing too is that there are a lot of ways for them to speak to people unfiltered too these days. They can go on Facebook, they can use Twitter, they can use all these different things. So if you as a journalist just say, I'm not going to interact with them, I'm just going to let them do their thing directly, I don't think you're doing anybody a service. I mean, I think it's better to do what Tapper did and to challenge and...
Yeah. Oh, don't get me wrong. If there were equal conversations, I would be all for it. But that was rare for Jake Tapper. I've not seen him do that before. Kellyanne has always gotten it over on him. And she was using some of her best techniques on him that day, which is why it's so great. Like, well, I got the call from a member of the press. I won't say who because I don't want to embarrass him. And I was at my child's play. She was a wonderful Annie. Oh, come on! And that wins over a lot of people. You know, she seems like a concerned mom trying to do her job when she's really busy. That is brilliant. And it's scary. And we gave her, by putting her on national television, we give her the audience to spin her craft, her lies.
Yeah, but anytime any politician gets on TV, they're doing that. I mean, yeah, again, she might be a more extreme example of it, but I don't think you can trust any of them from either party. I just think you always have to be skeptical of what they're selling.
Give me an example. Give me an example of what you mean.
Of somebody close to a Spicer or to a Kellyanne. You don't even.
I mean, what I'm getting
at the politician themselves. I mean, Andrew Cuomo would be an example. You can't take anything that he says at its word. He every time he gets at a podium, he tells you how upstate New York is flourishing and it's, you know, we're all dancing and money and everything.
Okay,
you have to be skeptical of anything a politician says.
Point taken. Yeah. But is that different than a Bowling Green massacre?
Right, but that may have been a mistake.
No.
Oh.
You don't think so?
No.
I mean, she did apologize for it.
Yeah, I think she was apologizing because she got caught.
Well, yeah, but that would be so... Well, it's obvious. If she did that intentionally, it'd be so obvious she was going to get caught, wouldn't it?
Okay. I have to say, no, I think they are not aware of how obvious they are. And that list of 78 events that were terrorist attack, there's one in there where a young woman was attacked. The mother of that woman said, this is just completely irresponsible. It was not a terrorist attack. We were in touch with the police. It was never classified that way. Yes, of course, when you have a death, an American death in a hostile country, you're going to... have some concerns, but it was ruled out immediately. Nevertheless, it was still on the list with attack spelled wrong, by the way.
Yes.
So how careful are they if they're not even spell checked?
Attack was spelled
four or five times.
Yeah, four times wrong.
But see, that's an example of where they release something that was inaccurate and they are called out on it. That's better than just ignoring them entirely, isn't it? Or just letting them release that somewhere else.
I'm not saying ignore them. I'm saying you don't have to invite the liars on in person to spin their stuff.
Alan?
I was just going to say our very wonderful listeners who we love and write in quite frequently are lining up behind Rosemary to say, yes, don't let them on. I disagree with that, by the way. I disagree when somebody tells me not to have John Faso on the air, who is an elected congressman from the region, because we don't like him. Take off Herb London. We don't like him, so take him off. Sorry. These people are important. We will interview all the Democrats and all the Republicans, and that's the way it is.
I understand that, and I think that's important. But if the person you are is making a mockery of it and is not giving you any information and is not answering the question, I mean, look, we also are in broadcasting. We want a good guest. And while there is a point where I think Kellyanne Conway is a good guest because it's fascinating to see her...
Ply her craft.
It isn't. I don't think you really get anything out of it. And it's. Not only does it later turn out often to be untrue, but it's usually confrontational. She makes no bones about her hatred for the media, and you just wonder. Well, I do agree with Rosemary on this that I think that sometimes it is silly to have them on because you don't know at the end what you accomplish.
They are not important.
Well,
Kellyanne and Spicer are not important in themselves. They are tools of Trump, who is the one who's important. So if you want to portray and get at the truth of Trump, either be Fox and have Trump himself or Hannity, or you get the people who really know about him. Where's Bannon on the air? Where's Jared Kushner on the air? Where's Ivanka on the air? Where's Melania? So we haven't heard from her since before the election. Those are the people who can really tell you real things about
I do agree that it's always better to get past the spinmeisters whenever you can.
Okay.
But at the same time, if you don't have Kellyanne Conway on the air and she's only on Fox or if she's only on friendly networks, she's never going to be challenged.
You don't have to challenge her by putting
exactly.
her on air. You call her up and say, we contacted Kellyanne Conway's office and got the following reply. We do that all the time. It's giving them airtime. That's the problem.
Well, first of all, I couldn't disagree with you more, even though I do it at fear of my life here because of the vast number of people who are lining up to support you and not letting the spinmeisters on. I just think you have to give everybody a chance to talk. And if it were Obama now, and they were saying, and people were saying, we're not letting Obama's people on because he's full of baloney. We're not doing it. We won't do it. I think that these letters would not be pouring in this way.
But
I
don't. But it is. I think it's different in the sense that they are offering people up, and if you don't have trust in that person, you look for somebody else instead. So, I mean, CNN, for example, in turning down Kellyanne Conway the first time, not this last time, but the first time, they instead took Mike Pence. Well, to me, that's a much better get. So if you can negotiate that and say, okay, I don't want to talk to Kellyanne Conway because I don't feel I'm going to get the information that I need. I would much rather have a conversation with Mike Pence, and they got him. Well, then I think that makes sense.
And you're totally missing the pressure that it puts on Spicer and Kellyanne, whoever it is, to do a better job. If they get away with just coming on and doing their usual BS, they'll keep on doing that. Now, Kellyanne's got to think about maybe changing her technique a little bit. Spicer has changed his technique already, and that's been from pressure.
But that's because they were on the air and they were challenged. That if you had just said they're not going to go on the air and they had never embarrassed themselves, they wouldn't be changing their tactics.
By the way, I don't mean to indicate that I don't think they should ever not be on the air. I think they should. I just don't know that at every time they say they want to be on the air, you should...
Well, I agree with that. I would agree that you should always push to go beyond the spin people. But that's true no matter who.
On the other hand.
No matter who the politician is.
On the other hand, do you guys really think that Pence is less of a spinmeister listening to what the big guy has to say than these other two? I don't think so.
Nobody's a heartbeat away from being from the head spinmeister.
He's an elected official. Well, he's directly answerable to the people. That's a lot different than a hired liar.
But there's also the possibility that he is.
I think he has
less knowledge of what's going on in the Oval Office than Kellyanne Conway. Well, it's possible. There have been vice presidents who are essentially shut out of.
I don't think Pence is one of them. Look at the people who are in the secretary in the departments. Mm-hmm. They're all friends or connections or associates of his. Yes, Alan.
Rosemary, have you seen an example of Pence saying anything like Gorsuch said this morning that might be considered to be different from what the president is saying?
That's different than what the president is saying. Of course I could. During the election, after the tapes came out, he had a very hard statement and, in fact, was rumored, there were reports that he was thinking of withdrawing. He's disagreed with the president on that. I think he has disagreed on a number of things, but in the same way that Gorsuch did, gently. Yeah, saying, I think that Putin is a bad man, but I can understand the president's, concerns. He couches it in nice terms. But yeah, he's definitely differentiated himself from Trump.
Well, I'm telling you now, they both report to the president. The president tells them what to do. If anybody doesn't like it, well, then they should just join the lumpen' proletariat.
With that, we'll take a break and we will check in with other. We welcome your letters. We have a stack here. We'll get to those in just a second. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. And we have letters. Stacy says, Chris, you're joking, right? A mistake made 5 times is about Bowling Green. Mm-hmm. I know it's hard to believe people can lack integrity to such a degree that they will go on national television and lie to the public they're supposed to represent. But that's who these people are. The problem with having them on is that many people will hear their lies and believe them and never know the truth. It's comparable to a regular spinning. Comparable to a regular spinning politician.
Well, that's why I think you have them on, and then you challenge what they say. I mean, we know that.
Yeah, exactly.
She was called out on that Bowling Green thing, and that led to a mea culpa.
Go ahead.
So go ahead. Sure. No, I was going to read another letter. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Do you want to do that, or do you want me to do that?
No, I want you to do it, and then every once in a while I want to do it. Know what I mean? Because usually I do it because I'm there.
Well, right.
But if you want to do it. Sometimes I want to do it.
Okay, but I just don't.
Sometimes I want to do it.
But then we're reading the same one.
Sometimes I don't want to do it.
That's
No. I have great faith in you.
Okay.
I have great faith in you, Joe. Okay, so Kellyanne writes, hello, thanks for the discussion. Just wondering if you would have a guest on one of your shows. In other words, Medical Monday, if you knew they were a serial liar. I understand the impetus behind having her, but in my opinion, spreading White House propaganda shouldn't be validated. Okay, folks, but remember.
Did you say that came from Kellyanne? Does Kellyanne want to be on Medical Monday?
No, she was the subject line.
Okay.
And it came from Stephen.
Okay.
Look, folks, this is a double-edged sword. We saw the mistake that the Democrats made, at least some people think so, when they said, okay, we're going to do the nuclear option on the appointment of federal judges. Whoa. You think about it then, that right now you say, don't let those lying people from the White House on. And then what happens when it's the other way around? That's all I'm saying, folks. Either you believe in freedom of speech or you don't. And you don't start censoring people, especially if they're coming from the highest place where policy is made. That's all I'm going to say.
Narcissa writes, I think the idea of letting bold-faced, repeated liars get airtime and say, oh, reporters should simply be prepared, ignores the neuroscience of how facts are assimilated into the brain. Simply hearing the lie over and over and over increases the brain's willingness to give it credence, even if the listener knows it's false. Thus, every time you let Ms. Conway on, you are in fact giving her lies greater authority. People can express different opinions without lying. We also got this from Richard, who says the group of Bannon, Miller are an arrogant, lying, scary, disrespectful group. They are the people behind Trump and need to be called out. And they should be, he said, please talk about them and they should be talked about. Also, we got this one from Barbara, who says there is a difference between Faso and Herb London. They give their opinions and points of view. Spicer and Conway are not even spinning. They are lying and streaming falsehoods. Very different, I think.
Do you want to know how many letters I have received at WAMC saying, we don't want Herb London on our station? Get him off, shut him up. So for this very good letter to say there's a difference is fine. But let me tell you, I don't know who makes that call. And I can tell you with my hand up, one hand on my heart and the other hand up in the air, I don't want to even start to count how many people have written us about Herb London.
William writes, I am another listener in Rosemary's camp on this issue. Here are the operative words, opportunity cost. When talented journalists are covering these knuckleheads, Conway and Spicer, they are not using their skills to dig and get at the real news. They are these are very perilous times. The press needs to change the ground rules in order to effectively serve the American public. Go Rosemary.
Yeah, I you know, my views on how to cover this White House go beyond that. I would shut down the White House Bureau. I would send people out into Congress and into the agencies where we're really finding things. We're sitting here talking about Kellyanne and Spicer today. And meanwhile, do you know who the number two guy is at the State Department? He's a neocon, Elliot Abrams. We haven't even discussed him. Get him on the show.
Chris is taking this in.
Yeah, I mean, The underlying assumption that people are making, though, is that all the other spokespeople from all the other administrations were telling us the truth. And if you think that was the case under the Obama administration, that's they were lying too. Maybe not as aggressively. Maybe weren't so many egregious examples 2 weeks in, but they told their own lies too. And if you start saying we're not going to have any of those people on, you're not doing anybody a service. I don't know. Go ahead, Rosemary.
Well, I see your point, and I know that the press right now is trying to figure out whether to.
The press had a very, very hard relationship with the Obama administration.
They did. They did.
That was not like the love fest that people sometimes make it.
He was horrible to the press. He's the worst one since Nixon. I've said that repeatedly.
He laid the groundwork for Trump to do all the stuff that Trump is doing.
Absolutely. The problem, though, is that I believe the Trump people have figured out exactly the rules how the press works, and they are manipulating them. Obama, on the other hand, he went around the press. He would use, you know, the TV shows and all that. But he still would have interviews. He still abided by the rules. That's all gone out the window now. All of it has gone out the window. Even to things like you can't now email an FOI request to the Justice Department. It has to go by fax. I don't even have a fax machine anymore. Or you have to write. That's intended to slow down. In many ways, small and big, they are thwarting the press. They are obstructing the press. And that is new. And we cannot just use the same old rules.
But that But those are techniques that are that politicians across the board are using, including the Obama administration, and the Cuomo administration is famous for that stuff too. I mean, this is
maybe we should be treating them all differently.
If you want to say we across the board we're not going to talk to spinners and those types of people anymore, then maybe that would be one thing. But it has to be an across the board thing. You have to assume that all of them are being dishonest.
Okay, I'll make
with
it across the board. I think that would be that's much better reporting. Good idea.
It would be better reporting.
If
it would
I was Tsarina of the world, that would be the rule today.
Yes. All right. James writes, this Valentine, your isolated special brand of Democratic political hysteria, self-flattery, and name-calling vindictiveness is very overbearing. Please incorporate political views other than your own particular brand of bias into this quote-unquote roundtable discussion. I doubt that this opinion of mine is singular. We got this from Joe.
Wait. Are you telling us, letter writer, that you haven't just heard a disagreement on how the press and Trump get along and whether we should play people or not? You haven't been listening to that, or am I just nutty here?
And I don't think some of this is not necessarily political. There are conservatives who are very upset at some of this stuff too. Many of them actually, including if you read magazines like National Review, they are as appalled by much of this as this quote-unquote liberal press is.
I suspect a lot of that was inspired by my repeated calling of Spicer and Kellyanne liars. And that is inspired by right-wing radio, which I listen to every time when I'm not here. I listen to them. And the name-calling on both sides is actually quite out of hand.
We'll pause there. We'll get a news break from Ray Graff, and we'll return to our conversation. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. And we got a bunch of letters I want to get to. We'll do those real quick, and then we'll move on to some other topics. And so here we go. John in Norfolk writes, fascinating discussion this morning. Both sides making excellent points. This is why we love the roundtable. Though Rosemary makes a very good argument, I do believe that Alan is correct. Bring on the liars and call them out on the lies. We got this from Evan, who says Tsarina of the world needs to become a t-shirt for the next fun drive. Vanessa said sunshine is the best disinfectant. We need to hear what they are up to so we can analyze and assess it. The answer is more, not less. Claude says, regarding Conway and Spicer, I was in PR for some 50 years. Yes, I'm older than Alan. The cardinal rule was not to lie on behalf of the client and to instruct the client not to lie. If the client wanted you to lie, you resign. Sean says, while we talk about who can be interviewed, regulation prohibiting coal waste from being dumped into streams is being repealed, and as well as the prohibition against the mentally ill receiving Social Security from buying guns.
And both of them have been covered extensively on the station by NPR.
And we have discussed both those issues on this program as well, but there you go. Keith says Kellyanne Conway was not corrected or challenged about the Bowling Green massacre during her interview with Chris Matthews. He went on to the next question and left it alone. This is one of the problems with letting liars on the air and too many things to cover. These people muddy the waters by design.
It's true. They lie so repeatedly and rapidly, it's hard to catch up. In the O'Reilly interview on Super Bowl Sunday, Super Bowl day with Trump, he did the same thing. He goes, now, Putin kills people, but you don't think we do? You know, I was against the Iraq war from the beginning. And then he made the point that we kill people in wars. He didn't support it from the beginning. That's been debunked numerous times. But O'Reilly didn't even have time to mention it. You can't do it.
We got this from Barbara, who says, I guess I'm surprised at how glibly the silencing with Senator Warren was chalked up to male chauvinism. I believe it goes way beyond that. They silenced a voice of dissent. Where is the outrage?
Well, there's plenty of outrage. You can buy a button now that says, nevertheless, she persisted.
Yeah, I agree with that. There's no shortage of outrage.
Yeah.
And Ryan says, no cat here, but I listen every morning and cook my breakfast as the dog watches my every move. Definitely staying in today. Stay safe, everyone. P.S. I love Rosemary. And And Gina says, just wants to correct us, that actually the worst newspaper in America is the Oklahoma City Oklahoman, a very red state newspaper, completely conservative and one-sided. So there you go. You have competition.
Then there's that paper in Las Vegas owned by the Republican donors. That would be up in the top
probably,
three.
There are a lot of. It could be an interesting debate about which is the worst newspaper, but Roger Stone has
let me say that the Times Union is not in that group. The Times Union is a very good newspaper. It may be a little cautious, but it's a very good newspaper.
Well,
that's all I got to say about it.
Thank you, Alan.
Lisa says, I have to express how much I love you guys in WAMC. We watch the panel through the computer on the radio. It comes in fuzzy, so we watch it online. Anyway, I see someone is drinking soda. That would be me. And as you know, soda is no good. Sugar kills. Please, please take care of yourselves. We need to. We need you all to get to 2020.
Okay, now let me just speak to this for a moment.
Yes, please do.
Because this is personal between Joe and I.
Yes, it
is. I love Joe, and I'm trying to save his life. He does not drink soda, sugar soda. He drinks diet
Pepsi.
And
it's pure chemicals.
He drinks it in the same way. And I'm not going to be a liar here. I was for years addicted to diet soda, but there is an increasing number of people who think that the diet soda may be worse for you than the sugar, and for a lot of reasons that's pertaining in this and that. So, and by the way, we're going to now get 50,000 letters on that.
Yeah,
issue.
I know.
But it is only because we love him that we try to protect him.
Thank you.
Should we grab it from him?
One of my favorite stories, I tell the story, like when I go out and, if you do any kind of speaking or anything, and people ask, what's the obvious question people ask? What you guys know. What's the first question people ask?
Well, to me, they say, how do you put up with Alan?
Well, right. So the variation that I get of that question is, what's Alan really like? Yeah. Right? You know, that's what. So I was.
Now, when they say what's Alan really like, you know what they want to hear.
Well, that's right.
You know what they want to hear.
And the answer,
they
want to hear the dirt.
They don't want to hear.
The answer is that I always give is, I think if you ask that question, you already have an answer in mind. That's my answer. But anyway, I was so one of the stories that I tell is that I was going up. We have a great ice cream place in town called the Ice Cream Man. So I was going up, and I got an ice cream cone, and I was very happy. It was a hot day. I'm sitting there with my Almond Joy ice cream cone, and I'm walking down the steps, and this guy comes up to me and he goes, "I'm gonna go tell Alan. He's gonna be furious that you're eating ice cream." And I said, "You're right. He will
That's
be."
That's right. And you
You're
know
absolutely
why?
Right.
And you know why? Because I'm jealous. The fact of the matter is, I'd love to eat ice cream, but it's not for me.
we thank you that you are concerned of our survival. That is very nice. We appreciate that. All right. So let's go on to some other topics. We didn't mention the. I think we kind of went around it. We didn't mention the Nordstrom tweet. We probably should bring that up. The tweet was made. Oh, no, I can't bring it up. Hold on. You know, when I have my links wrong in these things, you guys really ought to tell me.
We just are used to it. We just go look it up.
All right.
You're a busy man.
I know. All right. So Donald Trump, President Trump lashed out on Wednesday at the Nordstrom department store chain for dropping his daughter Ivanka's accessories and clothing line, once again raising ethical questions about the relationship between his presidency and his family's sprawling business interests. Mr. Trump has already broken with tradition by singling out companies for criticism like Boeing, Lockheed Martin, automakers, and news organizations, sometimes causing gyrations in their stock prices and prompting debates about whether corporations would tailor their conduct to suit a bellicose president. But in those cases, his ire targeted government contracts, departing American jobs or news coverage, not his own family's personal fortune. 6 days after Nordstrom announced that based on sales, it would no longer carry Ms. Trump's products, a decision that prompted some Trump supporters to call for a boycott of Nordstrom's. The president took to Twitter to complain that Ivanka had been treated so unfairly by the company. His first post, the message from his personal account, and then resent from his official White House account.
Okay, I'll go first. Basically, she has overpriced skinny girl dresses, and they're not selling, and that's the end of it. And it has nothing to do with the governance of the United States. It's ridiculous that he has spent this much time on it, that we are spending this much time on it, and that he has not divested. That's what really needs to and should have occurred.
We should note, because we've talked about Kellyanne Conway, but she has tweeted this morning, go buy Ivanka's stuff.
Yeah, that government, top government people are now spending all their time taking care, really, of Trump family business. Awful.
He also did say, she is a great person, always pushing me to do the right thing. Nordstrom's is terrible. So just note that. Chris?
I pretty much agree. I mean, it's just, it's hard to believe that this is what they're worrying about, you know, and it's such a big and crazy and dangerous world, and they're worried about what Nordstrom's is selling. I don't
know. Alan, I'm interested in what you say. Sean Spicer, Mr. Trump's press secretary, said the president's tweet was not about business, but it was about an attack on his daughter.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm thinking beyond all of this nonsense. I'm thinking, okay, let's say half the country loves, it's not true, but half the country loves Trump, the other half doesn't. If Trump can get enough people to go and buy the stuff, he'll, wherever they have to buy it, they will in fact make them even richer than they are, which is pretty rich. And so, on the other hand, what's the name of the organization? Get Your Wallet or
Grab Your Wallet,
whatever it is.
Grab Your Wallet.
Yeah, Grab Your Wallet has their way of saying, okay, now, would I buy anything personally from a Trump group? No, but then that's where I'm coming from. So if you got, but the N, the totality of the number of people who are out there, if a very small proportion on either side were to have their way, it could make a huge difference, right?
Yes, and I do think that there's an argument that this was an attack on Ivanka. Nordstrom's was definitely named in Grab Your Wallet. And the reason that Grab Your Wallet campaign is effective is because Trump is still involved in his family businesses. So it's a real sore spot by which he can be attacked, and that's why he should get out of the family business. The other thing, the other story that's been overshadowed by Ivanka and Nordstrom's is that his namesake son had a company in South Carolina. It was going belly up, so Trump goes in and buys it. And it's a polluting company. And the laws in South Carolina are that if you buy a company and the pollution was caused by the person before you, you don't have to clean it up. The state does. But if it's yours, if you're involved with the previous owner and you just have changed a name or something like that, you still have to pay for it. So Trump submits an application to South Carolina saying, I had nothing to do with the previous company. Owned again by his namesake son, and he was asking for the state to pay for the entire cleanup. The state has turned down that application. Is that now a conflict between state officials and the president of the United States? That's completely crazy because he shouldn't be involved in a business. How do you, if you're a South Carolina official, how do you deal with that? And what will Jeff Sessions do if it goes to the Department of Justice or the EPA guy? He has to get out of business. And that's really the bottom line of this. And we're going to keep coming back and we're going to keep having these kinds of stories as long as he continues to try to be an executive producer of a stupid TV show and run family businesses and be the president of the United States.
Alan, did you want to weigh in?
Yeah, I weigh very little, actually. Which is
because you don't eat ice cream.
Yeah. No, well, ice cream, and we have an interesting letter along those lines from somebody called D. Quote, Alan sounds intolerant, lactose intolerant. David.
Well, you know.
There you go.
I don't know your personal, you yeah.
No, we drink only lactose milk here at the house. Look, the fact of the matter is this is all joyful for the president. He knows full well that this is the kind of stuff that is engaging the American people. Meanwhile, as we have said so many times on the show, the other stuff goes under the door. We've just had a letter that from somebody who said that, and I can't find it right now, but it says that, you know, by our talking about this, Rosemary was absolutely right. We are ignoring the other stuff. So.
There is some truth to that, obviously. I mean, it is kind of noise, you know. It's just, it's the scandal of the moment that will pass. And tomorrow there'll be something else. And it does seem like there's just so much background noise and so much, I don't even know what the word is.
But see, I agree. I think that, but at its core, it is an issue about the divesting. And I think, you know, you can lose it and saying, oh, that, you know, he went after.
Yeah, but that's not going to happen, right? I mean, he's not going to divest. He's made that pretty clear.
But the Trump.
You can argue until we're blue in the face that he should, but he's just not going to. So you're going to, like Rosemary said, we're going to keep
over,
having.
When the audit's over, we're going to see his taxes.
As soon as the audit's over.
Yeah, the audit's over, yeah.
Or did he change his mind in his first news conference? He said, no, I don't have to, I won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about it but the press.
Only the press cares. Right?
Go ahead, Alan, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say one thing, but the Trump sort of brilliance, some would say evil brilliance, is that he knows that if he says, I'm just sticking up for my kid, there isn't a little league parent in the country or anybody else who hasn't yelled at the umpire, who won't step. We have a guy who is just intolerable here, who went after my wife the other day, and I said, "Let me at him, let me at him, let me go." Mm-hmm. So I mean, I think he understands intuitively. This is the kind of thing that will make people say, "Oh yeah, I get that."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's a good point.
One of the stories that, you know, when people say that you forget about the other stuff, you know, there was a story in the New York Times yesterday about a crack in the Antarctic ice shelf.
Thank goodness we're bringing this
growing up. 17 miles in the last 2 months. I tell you about this for two reasons. One, I want to discuss it, but also, I urge you to go on the New York Times website and look at the graphic, because it is so, how they do it is amazing. Because just in the last 2 months, there's a 17-mile crack on this
shelf,
which is the fourth largest, we should note. Yeah. And obviously scientists are very concerned that it's getting close to a full break. And it has accelerated this year in an area already vulnerable to warming temperatures. Since December, the crack has grown by the length of about 5 football fields each day. Each day. And they show this graphic of the shelf and pretty much the part that will fall off. And you know, if you want to get really mad, although, you know, I think we probably already are to some degree, but if you want to get mad, you know, you look at the stuff that's happening and then you turn around and say, okay, well, what are we doing to address this overall problem of climate change? And the answer is, well,
nothing.
We're moving away from all of that.
Yeah. This will be, when it breaks off, when it calves, the largest iceberg that we know of ever.
Yeah.
And yet we still have people saying, oh, well, it was really cold here in January, so we're not have global warming.
A hoax.
Very distressing.
And this is, it's the tip of the rift is currently only about 20 miles from reaching the other end of the ice shelf. So, I mean, at the rate we're going, assuming we stay at that rate, you're looking at within by
a few months.
Yeah. By the beginning of March, presumably. Because of the amount of stress the crack is placing on the remaining 20 miles of the shelf, the team expects the break to come fairly soon. The iceberg is likely to break free within the next few months, says the lead researcher. The rift tip has moved from one region of likely softer ice to another, which explains its stepwise progress. So it's all scary stuff. We'll leave it there for this.
And by the way.
Yeah, Alan.
I just want to say one last thing. We are always criticized for what we don't do. We have a letter here saying the Oompa Loompa in chief, I think that's me, is so worried about Nordstrom, but not one single word about the folks in New Orleans dealing with cleanup from the tornado. Ugh. And boy, Jonas was sitting right there a couple of blocks away. Amazing.
Well, we welcome your letters always, of course, panel@wamc.org, and we will be we will continue our program. Thank you to Chris and to Rosemary and to Alan. We will be back. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.